Thanks for joining us today, Anthony. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about RainCube.
RainCube is a solution to the current water crisis that we're experiencing at all levels around the planet. And the reason why I say it's a solution is because it's observing nature and how can we as a culture, as an economy, as individuals tie into that natural pattern. So RainCube is a combination of both ancient techniques in harvesting rainwater as well as new techniques using software and the internet to help us scale that transition.
Awesome. So what brought about this curiosity in order to kind of get back to our roots?
Well, it's very obvious that there is a disconnect with how we are interacting with our water supply. A lot of that has to do with the infrastructure that's been built. A lot of it has to do with the economics surrounding water. And a lot of it just has to do with how we view the world and how modern Western civilization views the world is as other, as separate, as something that needs to be controlled. And therein lies the problem. And that goes deeper. It's a reflection of the inner conflict that we have as we seek to dominate and to extract both from the environment and from interpersonal relationships, because the economy that we exist in is a win-lose environment. So more for me is less for you. And it's been that way for a long time. So nature doesn't work like that. Nature is based on abundance. It's based off interaction. It's based off cooperation. And we live on a single planet in a universe, and we need to come to a mutual understanding. What is our role here? What are humans on Earth to do? So that's the question that we're trying to answer right now as we go through this ecological crisis. This is a come to Jesus moment, if you will, in understanding where do we go from here.
So it sounds like a big part of the battle is awareness.
Well, I think even before that, the language that we use in terms of a battle, who are we battling? What is the war? There is no war. There is no enemy. It's a confrontation of our own egos, and the solution is surrendering to what needs to be done, not self-serving, but in service to others and in service to the greater good. And that is a very hard thing to do in our current environment.
Definitely. Yeah, we're definitely not encouraged everywhere we look in order to work together. It's very much me and how can I get mine. So
exactly. So how do we transition forward while having one foot in the old story and the traditional economy while building a bridge to the new story and the new ecological economy that we need to exist in? Because what the real balance sheet that we're looking at is our water. How much water do we have? How much water are we using? And then that operates at different scales. That could be your individual house. It could be your neighborhood and the topography and how does water flow when it rains or when the ice melts and the rivers flood? Where are we building? How are we interacting? How are we designing our homes and our buildings? All of these things need to come into question, and there are solutions to better design, to better appropriate interaction, and it's just going to take time as more people become aware of these solutions. Now, that can either be done proactively, where individually we are coming to the realization that this story won't end well if we keep on the current trajectory, and we'll make changes with foresight. Or, and this is probably what's going to happen, is it's going to be a retroactive response to an ecological crisis. So if a hurricane comes and it knocks out the power and the water stops running, then you are reacting to meeting those basic services. Whereas if you are planning ahead and making the upgrades to your home and putting up that investment to improve your security, that's another option. But once again, you're only secure as your community. So even if you do have solar panels, but everybody else in your community is in the dark, where do you think they're coming? They're going to come to your home. They're going to be asking for your help. And it's everybody's responsibility to work together. So that's the challenge, and I can be designing technical solutions, but as long as there's a fundamental cultural disconnect, no technical solution will help fix it. So what I work on a lot with a long-term vision for RainCube is building what I call the Internet of Rain. So similar to what's happening in the solar industry with peer-to-peer energy sharing, microgrids, we can be employing some of the same tools to create a peer-to-peer rainwater grid. And the idea is, if you have a bigger roof and a lower demand than your neighbor, then there becomes an opportunity to share your surplus to who needs it the most in your community, who is most local. And we can assign a digital value to that physical harvested rainwater using the Internet of Things. And what the Internet of Things is, it's a series of very low cost, very low footprint computers that are attached to sensors, and those sensors are bringing in different data points, either humidity, temperature, water levels, different things that we want to be measuring. And then that information gets stored and processed, and this is where the technical innovation is starting to shift, and everything is happening very quickly in this environment, because we've gone from centralized servers to cloud servers. Now we're going to the edge, and what the edge is these little cheap computer devices are running machine learning programs locally at the device to take in that data and information and use cognitive powers that are encoded in the software to help set parameters. So just to give an example is, let's say that your water level is critically low, there hasn't been any rain, there's no forecast for rain, so that machine intelligence will then restrict the water use. Because right now what we have is, if I want to go check the water level, I got to physically walk outside and look at the tank. That's a huge labor cost. If there is a software program that's running in the background that's constantly checking water levels, then that has just freed up my mind space to do other things that I would prefer to think about, which is asking better questions. So this is the point that we're at now, is we have these very nascent new digital tools. We have an internet that's been built to serve advertising revenue, and we're starting to transition to the next iteration of the web, Web 3.0, which is decentralized, which is tokenized, which is flat, which is open, borderless, permissionless. And when you hear this, what may come to mind is Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is the first distributed ledger technology that is offering a financial service, which is peer-to-peer money. That is just money, and there are many other things that we use to exchange with. And I talk a lot about the 8 forms of capital, the most important being natural capital. So how do we deploy a global Internet of Rain that's helping us to manage the global water supply? Now, my background is in economics. That's what I was trained in school. And I went to the University of Florida and got a degree in economics and graduated in 2008 when the economy was collapsing. So I understood very clearly that something is wrong. And I decided to go out and venture the answer to how do we create a better future? And by better, I mean a more appropriate, more holistic, more authentic living. Because we've gone to a globalized society. How do we embody the values that we want to see as a global culture? So that's where we're at right now. So to do that, after college, I moved to China and I lived there for 4 years. Understanding the Chinese miracle. And what the Chinese miracle is it's China from the early 80s started opening up to basically become the factory of the world. And what the US did was to exploit that opening up and put in KFCs and McDonald's and selling Buicks and Cadillacs to the Chinese market and basically exporting our consumer culture to China. And living standards did increase, but at what cost? And the cost was the environment. The cost was the community, because this culture went from being mostly agrarian farming very close-knit, intergenerational. And the biggest migration in the history of humans took place over the last 30 years as villagers migrated to the cities, and the cities grew. And we have a situation now where China has built all of these cities. They built 20th century cities for the 21st century. And it's a strange thing to witness, because we're so used to, like, oh, build a house and it'll exist for 100 years. But in China, you build a house that'll exist for 10 years, because then at 10 years, you'll have to tear it down and rebuild it, which is stimulating the economy. So we are, and the truth that I saw in China is that there's no difference between China and the US. There's actually no difference anywhere you go, because at the end of the day, we're all humans and we all have similar needs, desires, safety, security, belonging, connection to see and be seen. And, got to see very clearly through the propaganda, both on the US and the Chinese side, because what it comes down to in this economy is built on control, like we mentioned, like I mentioned earlier. So getting to experience the ecological crisis, the economic crisis in China firsthand really motivated me to then come back to the US, share that knowledge, and to help design and create a solution that goes beyond borders and that goes beyond governments to reach the people directly. So what's interesting about rainwater is it's like nobody owns the rain. Nobody can create a monopoly on the rain. It's everybody's responsibility to steward that resource. So the commons is what we are trying to steward. Now we have this distributed ledger technology that allows everybody to see in real time who is consuming what, who is sharing what, who is contributing what. And that is the big innovation. And it's not the only technological tool. It's one of the more important pieces to be available in the past few years. So the solution is to create a token or a currency that is based on the available rainwater supply, because rain is the budget that we're given. Mm-hmm. It's not taking from the ground, because even if we're sucking water from the ground, that water had to come from the sky at one point, either in the form of snow or in the form of rain. And these aquifers that we sit on top of in Florida have taken eons to fill up, and we've depleted them in the last few generations. So similar to California, Florida is going to be running dry because how everybody gets their water is from pumping groundwater. And the supply is running low and the prices are going to go up. So over time, it's going to become the economical solution to switch to rainwater, because when all the costs are included, all the externalities included in rainwater, it is the cheapest form of water per energy unit per volume. So pumping that water requires a lot of energy input, either coal or nuclear power, to pump, constantly be pumping this water around vast distances. So the infrastructure in the US and in the central underground plumbing system that's basically existed since the Romans is obsolete, because it's not economically feasible. It would cost trillions of dollars to rehabilitate the centralized underground infrastructure of the US. Where is that money going to come from? It's not. So what rainwater offers is a complete solution to the problem. What it requires is us to adapt and to change. Mm-hmm. Now, that is the real question. Are you going to adapt? Are you going to change? Are you going to live in this new story of living in harmony with nature and with your community? So that's not compatible with our current consumption narrative. Yeah. And that's what's missing in the current debate about the environment, is that we cannot keep this current system and have the environment in a healthy state.
Yeah.
Because every dollar created is something natural extracted.
So how do we display the solution?
By example. So what I've been doing over the last 3 years is building rainwater installations using the RainCube framework to varying degrees of success. So I've been spending my personal money to fund development of the RainCube IoT platform, which has provided a lot of validation to how to build that technology. However, to get that to the next step requires venture capital. So I am in the process of finding searching for venture capital, but it's not just from anybody, not taking money from anybody. It's somebody who understands the true essence of the problem. Now, before we get there, I can still be doing a lot of work in the meantime, which is showcasing how to build low-tech, low-cost, effective rainwater harvesting solutions using upcycled materials, using off-the-shelf parts, just to get people building that cultural proficiency with harvesting rainwater. Because the current market, it's too cost prohibitive to build professionally installed rainwater systems for most people. Most people don't have $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to put in a large scale system on their home.
Yeah.
So instead, I'm focusing on creating a very low cost DIY solution that most homeowners can implement themselves. So for under $1,000, you could be putting in 1,000 gallons worth of storage capacity. Mm. And that's enough to feed your garden, to grow the food locally, and also to have that in an emergency situation that could also be your shower, sink, and using filtration, your drinking water.
Awesome. Very cool. So the desire to go down this path started by witnessing a global issue. How would you sum up your precise purpose in this mission? Is it to overall kind of restructure the global system of consumption, or is that the goal in the end?
Well, I can only do so much, right? Yep. And I've traveled a lot and have done a lot of projects surrounding rainwater around the planet, and coming to the conclusion that I can't do everything. And in fact, I shouldn't. And this is something that has to happen on the individual level around the world, is coming to this understanding of how nature works. So I feel like my role is twofold. One is a prophet, having the fortune to witness with my own eyes what's happening around the planet. My responsibility is to articulate the path forward to a broader audience. And then the second part is acting as a wizard. And by wizard, I mean using technology to help to solve some of these problems. But even that gets tricky, because today's solutions are tomorrow's problems. So if I'm writing software today, who knows in 10, 20 years, what are the unintended consequences of that? So I think trying to avoid good intentions and trying to look at what we're facing honestly and providing a pathway for people in communities to adopt these new practices. So I feel like those are my two roles, prophet and wizard.
Awesome. So highlighting the tools for others to implement on a localized effort.
Right.
And in collaboration, we can impact the whole.
Yes, and empowering others to basically carry this story forward. Because it's interesting, what we're facing right now is a consciousness crisis. It's not an ecological crisis, because what we're seeing is a mirror of what is happening inside all of us, which is the separation that our society is based on has created a black hole in each one of us that can only be filled with more and more consumption. So how do we find true fulfillment, which is service to others, service to something more than yourself? And I think that is the biggest crisis that we all face right now.
Definitely. So how about for yourself, personally, is there anything that really fills you up outside of RainCube? Something just daily practices or?
Yeah, I have a personal yoga practice. I ride my bike. I enjoy being on and near the water. I have come to realize that surrounding myself with positive people, with People who share the same values is critical. Also, realizing what is under my ability to change and what is not, and trying to slow down, trying to take a step back, because my personality is very aggressive and I like to move fast. And part of the learning process for me is to slow down and to listen more. So I've been working on this project, RainCube specifically, for the past 3 years, but I've been on this journey for almost over 10 years. And also learning to let go of expectations. What was the catalyst for me inhabiting this current iteration of myself was my mother's passing 3 years ago from cancer. And that, for the first time, I think the greatest lesson that a parent can teach a child is how to care for another person even when it's difficult, and also understanding that death is just as much a part of life as birth is, and not having that fear of death. And I think that's what our culture here in the West is so fixated on, is avoiding that uncomfortable truth.
Yep.
And the fixation on youth. And I, here in Florida, where it's an older demographic, looking around and seeing how unhealthy the older generation is. And it's also quite disturbing, because in traditional cultures, the elders were the ones that were looked up to. We don't have very many elders to look up to.
Mm-hmm.
And for our generation, there are not very many good examples of people. Not to say that there aren't any, but if you look at right now, who's running the country? What example is that? And even if it wasn't Trump, even if it was Clinton or anybody else, the values that we are espousing as a country are not values that we should carry on into the future.
Yep.
So we have a kind of a double challenge. And by we, I mean the youth of America and the youth of the world have to forge a radically new path. And how do we navigate and find inspiration? So we will have to listen and look very carefully and closely at examples, good examples. So there are, I am fortunate to have some very inspirational mentors who I've met along the way, who are of the older generation. My grandfather right now is 85, suffering from Parkinson's. So his health is in decline. My grandmother, who is taking care of him, is also in decline in her body, but her mind is strong. So I've found a lot of strength and inspiration from them. But once again, we are facing very unique times and circumstances because we have the internet. And we've designed it poorly up till now. Or not designed it, it's been co-opted. It has been used for making money as opposed to liberating humanity. And now we're rethinking, what does the next iteration of the web look like? Because it's what we put into the web is only, what we get out of the internet is only as good as what we put in. So once again, who are we internally is what's going to show up externally. So now that we have this new tool, we have the responsibility to use it wisely, just like the last generation had to come to grips with how to use nuclear power, because we dropped a bomb. And we collectively said that is not a good thing to do again, and we haven't had a nuclear bomb dropped in many, many years. Will we forget that lesson? I hope not. So,
yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of what we're facing up against is as a species, will we destroy ourselves before we can get to a point of stability and homeostasis where we can actually be spreading more light into the universe, aka going to Mars and beyond. But we can't inhabit Mars if Earth is not healthy. So going to Mars hopefully will help us understand our planet better and understand how precious it is, similar to what the moon missions did in the 60s and 70s. which was to heighten awareness and consciousness of our place in the universe.
Yep. It always seems to lead back to awareness and understanding of, I mean, they say you can't solve a problem until you understand that it exists, right? So what are your regular practices in order to kind of keep yourself in check, like understanding who I am, you know, what I'm here for right now, like what's the next move? Because a lot of times we talk about doing things with haste and getting caught up in the, you know, move. What are the things that you kind of do in order to check yourself throughout this process to make sure that you're still serving your best purpose?
Well, I have the luxury of being able to devote a lot of time to non-doing. So like non-doing as an action. And what that means is saying no to a lot of things and to be very careful with the people and the projects that I work on, because I could be filling up my days with a bunch of stuff, a bunch of tasks and demands and plans. And what I found in the past is when I do that, I end up not accomplishing much. So by non-doing, I am creating the space to listen, to observe, to be. And when the right person or right project comes, it comes to me. I don't have to necessarily search for it. Not to say that I don't travel, but I found that a more powerful process is to stay still. And once you still, the distractions start to fade away and the true task at hand appears. And it's as simple as not running, but just taking one step to basically get on that train and it takes you away.
Yep.
So for example, right now I'm just focusing on one installation here in Gulfport, Florida. To do that very well, to do it completely, to do it properly, and then have that as a shining beacon to the community on how to replicate it. So while I am searching for funding, and searching, I mean, I am promoting the story from where I am. I can be doing the work now to be kind of facing this, what I call Horizon One problem, which is the here and now. The IoT technical part is Horizon Two, that comes next. And then the digital token is Horizon Three, that's even later. But we're working towards all of that. We're encompassing all of those solutions in the simple act of just choosing to say yes, rainwater is the way to go.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I follow a similar practice in which I try to allow the signs to be shown to me. But sometimes it's still good to have a vision, right? To visualize certain outcomes while remaining detached from those outcomes, so you don't find yourself upset or beating yourself up if something doesn't go through. Do you have any practices in order to make sure there's some goal on the horizon, some type of measurable, or maybe it isn't measurable, but maybe something to make sure that while you're not chasing distractions, you're at least moving the gas?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a real challenge because part of me wants to plan. Part of me wants to execute, and I found in the past is when I do make plans, even if I accomplish them, it doesn't get the reaction that I was quite hoping for or that is needed. So I'm, once again, non-doing, not making any plans, just trying to be as present as possible, because there's constantly people in need who are coming to me, and that may be the most impactful thing I can do, is to help those in immediate need. And then there's also the other challenge of, well, how do I pay my bills and how do I survive? And a lot of that is fear of the unknown and the lack of security that finances have usually brought. So that is a constant struggle, is how to balance that. Because at the end of the day, it's like, what do I need? I need shelter, I need food, I need water, I need community, I need connection. And all of those things are provided abundantly through nature. And I think if you're doing really good work, finances will follow. Like, that's been my mantra my whole working career, is do things that I love, do things that I'm passionate about, and the rest will take care of itself. So it's an ongoing process. I'm currently taking a course online called Living in the Gift by Charles Eisenstein, which I recommend everybody read his work, from Sacred Economics to A More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible to his new book called Climate, A New Story. I think that's required reading for everybody who is working on making this continual shift. And I think when it just comes down to it, is surrender. Surrendering to the moment, surrendering to the greater forces at play. And the visions that I get are when my mind is most still, because I'm not creating anything new. What I'm doing is seeing what nature wants me to see, or what the universe wants me to see. Whereas if I'm constantly busy or stressed or distracted, I can't see that.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. So what are some next steps that maybe our listeners could do to, you know, play their part?
Absolutely. Raincube.io is the website. I've written a 13-page blue paper, which outlines as articulately as I could muster the vision for how to build and scale the Internet of Rain. I would recommend everybody go and read that. Follow Raincube on Facebook, social media, just kind of the standard things. More tangible, though, is what I'm working on right now is a very simple DIY e-course that anybody can download. I may put a price on it, something just to, you know, make it so that people value it maybe a little bit more. But eventually I see this information becoming open source and wanting to see what other people design and build, almost creating a wiki of information, because every installation is going to be slightly different. So what I've built right now and what I'm working on here in Gulfport is something that is very specific to the American market, something specific even more to the Florida market, because everybody gets different rainfall, everybody's got a different climate, a different housing type, different soil type, different enabling constraints. So each system is going to be slightly different. So each person is going to have to understand what they're doing. And I would say that just education, just understanding more about what's going on in the environment. What is your local watershed? Let's just start with that. Each person should understand the topography and the flows and the challenges, because here in Florida we have red tide, and when you look at it, the natural waterways have been disturbed to dry out swamps in South Florida to build massive suburban housing structures and reroute that water to grow sugar cane, which dumps fertilizer into the waterways, which leads to these mega algae blooms.
Yep.
So it's really frustrating and disingenuous when scientists say, oh, this is a natural phenomenon. Well, yeah, I mean, it is natural to a point, but when you have human impact on top of it, exacerbating the situation with more fertilizer runoff, with distorted waterways, that has an impact, and that needs to be discussed. So last night, the city of St. Pete city council voted to ban plastic straws and styrofoam in public spaces, which it's like a question of, well, how do you enforce that, one? And then two, if somebody, you know, that's a deeper problem. That's an issue of individuals realizing that single-use plastic is not sustainable and that I need to make adjustments in my life. Maybe I get a bamboo straw, or maybe I bring my own cutlery or my own utensils and plates and bowls. I feel like that is a better solution to tell us a more compelling story than to have a top-down bureaucratic solution, because it's not solving the deep crisis. It's a symptom that's being addressed.
Yep.
So who knows what's going to come of that? I mean, I think that it's a slippery slope, because you could do it either way. Where how do you know that that law is actually benefiting? Because it could be something as simple as saying, well, it's illegal to harvest rainwater. Like, that exists in a lot of places. We're fortunate here in Florida where we don't have any real laws against harvesting rainwater, but we don't have any laws explicitly supporting rainwater. Mm-hmm. So we're operating in a kind of a legal gray zone. But if somebody says that it's illegal to harvest rainwater, are you going to obey that? Is that a morally just law? So we get into a situation of over legislating. We have a nanny state here in the U.S. You go to anywhere else in the world, you know, it's like people are actually responsible for their actions, because it's like in the U.S., it's like lawsuits and litigation is kind of the default. And that's also another situation that has created this problem, is we just have a bureaucratic mess that is not agile enough to respond to the problem. So I find it very hard to see how the U.S. continues to exist as a country into the future. I find it very difficult to see how any nation state exists into the future, because at the end of the day, we're on one planet. These man-made borders are totally irrelevant, and we have to work together as a global civilization to manage our water commons. If we don't, we risk the glaciers melting, which will then distort the global water conveyor belt, which is how it determines all of the weather patterns. And once the ice caps melt, who knows? We're in a point where we cannot predict, models cannot predict what will happen to our weather patterns. So everything is dependent on that. So the future is uncertain, and that's always been the case. So how do we live more presently is the question, and our lives and every breath is the answer.
Definitely. Well, you heard it, guys. Let's be proactive and not wait until who knows what, you know, befalls us. So is there any parting words you'd like to say?
Yes, one more resource I think that is very powerful. The book is called Designing Regenerative Cultures by Daniel Christian Wall. And that is a very powerful book that helped. It better articulates the root cause and the possible solutions better than I can. So I highly recommend everybody to read that book and to share the knowledge within your immediate community, leading by example.
Awesome. And every resource Anthony has mentioned today will be in the show notes, so check it out. And thank you guys for joining us. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Zach.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing your story, your wisdom, and, you know, your purpose here. So,
well, I'm very fortunate and grateful that I have a friend like you who is doing this type of work and is helping to highlight the people and the mantras that are helping to create a more beautiful world.
Definitely. It's my pleasure and it's my part. So, all right, bud. Catch you guys next week. Have a good one.